So in conversation and looking at my computer this morning to see what's new in the world and finding out that another one of my seminary classmates has been lost, and looking at the prayer requests, it's almost hard to believe that this is Joy Sunday. And this tends to happen. Stuff happens and seems like stuff happens more in December. And maybe it's because of the dark days. Maybe it's because of our expectations that we're everything is merry and bright. Maybe it's because of the cold weather. Maybe it's who knows. But it seems to happen. And yet this is Joy Sunday and there is joy and we're going to talk about that and we're going to celebrate that. And just a reminder, in case I forget to remind you again, which I don't think I will, on Thursday evening at 6 o'clock, we will have a Blue Christmas service. And that's the flip side of what we're doing this morning. Today we're recognizing the joy and celebrating the joy. And on Thursday evening, we will be acknowledging the loss and the grief and the pain and the darkness. And it will be on Thursday night because that is the 21st of December, which is the longest night, the shortest day. That's when the sun stops and changes direction, or the earth does, or whatever. But it's important to recognize that both of these are the realities of our world and our lives at this season, as well as others. I know that I had a hard time with anything ever going wrong at Christmas. I mean, if I had a cold at Christmas, it was a huge tragedy because I was not supposed to be sick at Christmas, but I often was. So this psalm is a very joyful psalm. It's got six verses. There's four references to joy in it or rejoicing. There's other joyful stuff in there. There's living in a dream. There's laughter. There are great things being done. There's fortune restored. All these things. And then in the last two verses, we have two mentions of the other side of the coin. We have the tears and we have the weeping. And this psalm is echoed in other ways. Psalm 30 is another one that acknowledges more of the grief and the pain and the distress of the people. But in the midst of that psalm, the psalmist says to God, "You have turned my mourning into dancing. You have taken off my sackcloth and clothed me with joy." And that's what happens in this psalm too. The Lord has restored the fortunes of Zion, and it was said among the nations that the Lord has done great things for them. And the psalmist affirms, yes, it's true. The Lord has done great things for us. We know that God has done great things for us, and we have rejoiced. And then he turns around and says, restore our fortunes again. So he's writing about a time that God has blessed God's people, and they remember that, but they're not in that time now. Restore our fortunes again. Like the water courses in the Negev. Do you ever wonder what that means, the water courses in the Negev? I mean, it's something that we read all the time in this psalm. And you may or may not know that that is a Hebrew word which means south. So think about the state of New Mexico. We live in northern New Mexico. We have the mountains, we have the streams, we have the snow. But head down south, go down to Clovis or Roswell or Truth or Consequences or Las Cruces. It's not quite the same. I mean, there are some mountains and there is water, but it's water in the desert, more so than it is here. We're technically in a desert too, but as you go farther south, it gets hotter. There's there's more appreciation for the water. So water courses in the Negev are essentially oases in the desert. So the psalmist is looking for another oasis. He's, I know the oases are here. I know that the water courses flow, and I just need to find them. Restore us, O Lord, refresh us. And then he goes on with those who sow in tears, who go out weeping. Why would they be weeping? Why would they be going out with tears? Because maybe they're in a desert time. Maybe they're in a time of drought. We can relate to that. And they're going forth with their seed, and maybe this is all they have. This is our last chance. This is our last chance for survival. This is that agricultural image again that we had last week in the psalm. If this doesn't work, if this planting doesn't produce, we're dead. We're going to die. And that's a hard choice to make, because if this is all the seeds you've got, it's either we starve to death now or we starve to death later. We eat this food now, and then we have nothing to plant, and we have nothing to grow, and we don't know what's going to happen, but it's not going to be good. Or we plant this. We know that we have to plant this because we have to have it grow, and we don't know that it's going to grow because, planting is never a certain business, especially in the desert, especially under bad conditions. You got weeds, you got pests, you've got weather that can interfere with the crop. And so you go forth weeping because this is a hard choice. But may they return with shouts of joy because, yes, the seed came up. Yes, the plants are producing. Yes, there's fruit. And they come home with shouts of joy, carrying their sheaves. So the key is making the right decision in that time of weeping and tears. Planting the seed is a statement of faith. It's an act of rebellion against the forces of darkness. And that seed that's planted ultimately can lead to sheaves of grain and abundance. Just as I think it was Pat said this morning, waking up is a great thing. Getting out of bed can be a great thing. Getting up and getting dressed can be an act of faith and an act of hope, just as much as going out and planting seeds. It means that what God has done before, God has restored the fortunes of Israel. God has restored his people. And God will do that again. And I have faith. And so I'm going to get up and I'm going to put on my clothes and I'm going to go out and I'm going to plant my seed. I'm going to plant the seed because that's what I need to do in order for there to be a crop. God gives the growth. But I have to plant the seed in spite of the tears, in spite of the fear. Those are feelings, and we have a choice how to respond to them. The problem, the threat, the sin is despair. Because despair leads to inactivity. Inactivity leads to death. So despair is a deadly sin. It's not just being depressed. Despair leading to inactivity is sinful because it denies the goodness of God in responding to our effort. However small our effort may be, whatever effort we make, God says, yes. And here's a little bit of joy to see you along the way. Here's another little bit of joy to see you along the way. Sometimes there's more joy, sometimes there's more sadness. They're always mixed. But if we go forth, we have the promise of reaping. Joy is not the whole story. Joy is the goal, and joy is something that we can hold on to even in the darkness. Whatever little bit of joy, whatever candle we have burning, can dispel the darkness where we are. And we have those pinpoints of light, those stars in the dark sky, those luminarias on a dark street, those moments of hope and remembrance that what God has done for us before, God will do for us again. Don't despair. There is joy on the way, and those of us who sow in tears can reap with shouts of joy. Those of us who are weeping and mourning and wearing sackcloth can be clothed in joy and given gladness. Those of us who make the effort can come home with shouts of joy, carrying the sheaves that represent God's abundant love for God's people. Thanks be to God.